Welcome to Appaloosa Radio, where stories come alive. Appaloosa Radio is a service of the Appaloosa Springs Audio Theater.
I know that is not a nice thing to say about a relative, especially a close relative like my Aunt Vivian's only son. I am Italian and we just don't say bad things about family. Unfortunately, the truth is, my cousin Danny Mariano was a thief. I don't mean, an occasional thief, one who steals ever so often. Nor do I mean an opportunistic thief, one who steals when a chance situation presents itself. No, I mean a perpetual, lifelong, unrepentant thief, one who steals from everyone, all the time. The first time I knew about his crooked tendencies was when Danny stole a carton of cigarettes from our grandfather. My grandfather had been a drill sergeant in the army, and he was one tough guy. When he noticed that the new carton of cigarettes had been stolen, he immediately knew it had to be one of us kids, either Danny, his sister Brenda, me, or my younger brother Paul. No one else had had access to his house after he had purchased the carton, and no one else would know where he stashed his stuff. My grandfather set us all down in a row, forbade any conversation, and began to give us the boot camp drill. He compelled us to do physical exercises until our bodies ached. He yelled at us as sergeants do. However, none of us cracked. We're Italian and we don't rat on each other. Besides, none of the rest of us knew that Danny had done it. He could be very sneaky. Finally, after an intense hour of grilling us, my grandfather let us go with a warning. "I'm watching you kids. If anything else goes missing, I know where to look." A couple days later, Danny showed me a wad of money. He was in a bragging mood. You know that carton of cigarettes our grandfather got so bent up about? Well, I sold it to a kid at school. A dumb kid. He paid me $15 for it, twice what it cost to originally buy. Nice profit. Dumb kid. What I did not know until many years later was that Danny had also stolen $35 that our grandfather was saving to buy our grandmother a present. My grandparents were not rich people. They lived in a small mobile home on some land just east of Renton, Washington. All they had for income was his army pension. It did not bother Danny that he had stolen from people who dearly love him, and who would have probably given him both the carton of cigarettes and the $35 if he had needed them. All he cared about was that the easy theft had netted him a quick $50. The first time I remember spending extended time with my cousin Danny was when I was 6 and he was 10. At the time my Aunt Vivian lived in Southern California with her current husband John. John was not Danny's father. That had been a short thing at the beginning of the war. But John wanted to be a good dad, and often sought ways that he could bond with Danny through manly activities. For Christmas in 1952, Vivian, John and family drove up to Seattle to be with us. John came up with a plan to take Danny, Paul, and me crabbing in the Puget Sound. When we hauled up the crab traps, which I now think were called pots, Danny pulled out a pair of crabs and quickly smashed them with a hammer. Stepfather John told him to stop, these are for eating, not smashing. I still remember Danny's response these so many years later. These are the stupid ones, the ones who were not smart enough to avoid getting caught. No smart crab would have fallen for it. Just stupid. Smart crabs don't get caught. Just like my cousin Danny, an admitted lifelong thief. The stupid ones get caught. Danny considered himself one of the smart ones, one of those who never got caught. By the summer of 1955, my Aunt Vivian had divorced second husband John and was actively looking for husband number 3. This time, her criteria were clear. Money and property. No more tall, dark, and handsome, just money, lots of it, and valuable real estate. While my aunt searched, Danny and his sister Brenda lived with us in Renton. It was there that my cousin Danny taught me to ride a bicycle. I was 9 and he was 13. He taught me in the same way he taught me everything else. He took his bicycle out from our garage and told me, "You're going to learn to ride a bike. Do what I tell you." We walked the bike 4 blocks to the top of a large hill. Then, Danny said, "Get on." I could barely reach the pedals, but I did. Then, he gave me a big push and sent me off down a steep slope. I fell, then I started to cry from my many road rash scrapes. My cousin said, "Shut up. Get back on, we'll do it again." And we did, 11 more times. Finally, I had the hang of it. "See, you can ride," he told me confidently. I learned to swim in much the same way. We lived in the always gloomy Seattle area, so my family did not have a pool. Fortunately, down on the main highway, there was a very nice motel that would allow neighborhood children to have pool privileges if we paid a 75-cent towel fee. I remember it was a warm Wednesday afternoon, when we converged on the motel's pool. I had taken a week of swimming lessons at the YMCA the previous year, but still could not make it from one side to the other. Well, my cousin Danny Mariano decided it was time that I really learned how. He took me to the deep end of the pool, next to the diving board, and then pushed me in. I fell like a rock, sinking down to the 13-foot pool bottom. I was in a panic, I had not taken a breath. All I knew to do was to kick, kick hard. So I did. When I finally made it to the surface, I gasped for air. Danny yelled at me, "Use your arms, use your arms." Somehow, I made it to the ladder. Just as I was dragging myself out, still gasping for air, Danny orders me, "Okay, let's do that again. Next time use those arms. Don't be stupid and go all the way down to the bottom." I don't remember how many of Danny's training sessions that it took, but I eventually became a strong enough swimmer to earn, while I was still in high school, my life-saving certification. We'll be right back. Then, I learned to shoot much the same way. Danny took my younger brother and me on what he called a rabbit hunt, but I don't remember him ever shooting a rabbit. Instead, we shot at tin cans next to trees or rocks and called it hunting. Danny borrowed one of my father's guns, an older two-barrel shotgun. His instruction consisted of, "Here, you take this and shoot." I did, but the gun's percussion knocked me flat on my back. Danny grabbed the gun from me. "Don't ever point a gun up like that." It was his only advice. Danny Mariano was a big guy. He stood over 6'5" and had broad shoulders. Despite his immense brawn, he was blessed with a sweet, angelic face. People liked him. He had a way of making you feel comfortable with him. His looks and his easy personality made him an ideal thief. While he had his giant arm around you, you did not realize that he was stealing your wallet. I said earlier that Danny was neither an occasional thief who steals only ever so often nor was an opportunistic thief who steals when a chance situation presents itself. Danny Mariano was always on the lookout for what he could steal. And, once he had stolen something, he was always looking for someone to sell it to. In some ways, Danny was a capitalist thief, always looking for ways to maximize his profit. Like the carton of cigarettes he stole from our grandfather, he often sold the items he stole for more than what they could have been purchased for at a store. He was a master at salesmanship. He could convince his customers that the proverbial pig's ear was in fact a jeweled purse. Ignore the blemishes, scratches, and signs of wear, this is a one-of-a-kind, a unique beauty, a valuable commodity, worth a premium price. When he was 16, a family friend hired Danny to help in their moving business. The friend thought he was getting a young, strong kid who worked hard and was well liked by both customers and the other employees. What he did not know was that Danny was also stealing him blind. I was at my grandfather's house the afternoon that Danny drove a company truck over to the house with a special gift for my grandfather. It was a large, recliner chair and Danny was giving it to our grandfather. He said that a chair's owner had discarded it and had left it for trash. My grandfather was dumbfounded by such a gift. It was so large that it barely fit inside his tiny living room. Then, he asked the obvious question. Why would someone throw away such a valuable piece of furniture? Danny was quick with an answer. It did not match the color scheme of the new house. Knowing that Danny often acquired lost things, I asked him how he had managed to get the recliner. He said that while he was loading the moving van, he set the recliner aside. When the crew went to lunch, he moved the chair into a wooded area next to the house. Later, after the moving van left, he borrowed the company's pickup truck, drove it to the house, and loaded it on. "Don't worry," he told me. "The insurance company will replace it." It was okay to steal things since the insurance will replace them. In his high school biology class, Danny met Virginia Rodriguez. A beautiful, and very smart, Portuguese girl. Virginia was a straight-A student who was aiming for medical school. Danny, well, not so much so. Virginia began doing Danny's homework assignments for him. Soon, they were dating, and then, they were engaged. No one was more pleased with Danny and Virginia's engagement than Joe Rodriguez, Virginia's father. Joe Rodriguez was old-school Portuguese. He believed in hard work, loyalty to family and friends, and in getting the job done, no matter what it takes. Joe had attended school only to the fifth grade, and after that he began working. First, he picked cotton in California's Central Valley. Then, he drove a tractor on an orchard in Wenatchee. Then, he drove a road scraper for the Army, building the Trans-Alaska Highway. Operating heavy equipment became his career and his means to personal wealth. By the time that Danny and Virginia were engaged, he owned his own paving business, building, on average, 20 miles of highway every workday. The Pacific Northwest was growing rapidly, and Joe Rodriguez and Sons Paving Company was one of the region's largest. The problem was that, in truth, there was no son in Joe's company. His only son, Hector, had died years ago from a fall from a tree. When Danny proposed to Virginia, Joe Rodriguez had the son he wanted. Danny dropped out of high school and went to work full-time for Joe Rodriguez. In many ways, Danny was a natural, running heavy equipment with relative ease. Danny was also good with customers, always one of Joe's problem areas. Most importantly, Danny made Joe Rodriguez feel good about himself. He always had an easy joke. He always talked about how smart Joe was. Danny even started dressing like Joe dressed. Unfortunately, there was no one who stole more from Joe Rodriguez than my cousin Danny Mariano. Danny was never cagey about what he stole. Whenever Joe asked where a piece of equipment was, Danny would simply say, with a smile, "I sold it." Then, he would make up a lie that he had to buy something special for Virginia. Of course, Joe knew it was a lie. Joe knew that the money went directly into Danny's pocket. However much Danny stole, Joe Rodriguez could not bring himself to fire him. He was family. He was the replacement son. Stuff did not matter. Family did. It was only when Virginia discovered that Danny had been surreptitiously dating other women that the sweet gig ended. She tearfully broke off the engagement, throwing the ring at Danny. The very next day, Joe Rodriguez fired Danny Mariano. Within a week, Danny had enlisted in the U.S. Marines. He was 19 and a half. About 20 years later, I drove out to Joe's retirement home on a large lake in central Washington state. As you might expect, it was massive. Each room had an unobstructed view of the lake. It had high ceilings and walls of glass. Stone and wood were everywhere. The four-car garage had both high-end sports cars and huge four-wheel drive trucks. Over a beer on the patio, he told me, that cousin of yours, he stole over $32,000 from me. I thought about getting some guys and roughing him up a little, but then he joined the Marines. I decided to let them take care of him. Danny Mariano enlisted in the Marine Corps, where his athletic abilities and his mental quickness brought him success. He was awarded excellent marks during basic training. And, because of his prior experiences, assigned to the heavy equipment training program. Within his first year, he was promoted to Lance Corporal and stationed on a base in the middle of California's Mojave Desert. My dad was always a very patriotic guy. We made several trips down from Seattle to visit Danny on his Marine base. Once Danny gave us a tour and took us bowling in the base bowling lanes. One Sunday, he even took us to the chapel for religious services. He seemed proud to be a Marine. And my dad was proud to have a Marine in the family. Italian families do not always tell all of the dark secrets. They leave many things unsaid. So, there are parts of the story I still don't know. Here's what I do know. Lance Corporal Danny Mariano was charged with stealing a Marine Corps truck and attempting to sell it. As I understand the situation, the truck was a large semi-truck used to haul heavy road grading equipment like bulldozers. I understand that Danny paid a guy to paint the semi-truck another color and to put fake license plates on it. I'm speculating, but maybe the truck was on its way to Mexico. What Danny did not know was the guy who was buying the truck was really an FBI agent. They had set up a special task force since so many pieces of equipment were being stolen from military bases. I remember my dad cursing. How could he be so stupid? Selling a stolen Marine Corps truck to an FBI agent. Danny pleaded guilty and was given 2 years hard labor and a dishonorable discharge. After his discharge, my dad felt sorry for Danny. If he were still alive, I could yell at him, "How could you be so stupid? Trusting Danny Mariano with your money." A perpetual, lifelong, unrepentant thief. One who steals from everyone, all the time. But my dad felt sorry for him and gave him money. Lots of money. $27,520 to be exact. Thank you. dad was not a rich man. He was an automobile mechanic who, after a lifetime of work, finally opened his own auto repair business in Renton. He did it through hard work, honesty, and becoming someone people could trust. The $27,520 that he gave my cousin Danny was money that he had saved to send my brother Paul and I to college and to buy a small home in California's Palm Springs. Danny Mariano had found a Shell oil gas station for sale. And he asked my dad to back him in the business. The station was in a great location, on the main highway that led to the massive Seattle-Tacoma Airport. It had three service bays and a large lot behind the station, offering additional opportunities for profit. It was a could not miss, once in a lifetime chance. The opportunity to build a business that could be handed down to sons and even grandsons. Shell Oil offered a great financing rate for the station and promised that the station would get priority in gasoline deliveries, so it would never be out of gas. My cousin offered my dad the station's service bays rent-free, but, fortunately, my dad chose to keep his auto repair business where it was. My customers know me where I am. Like he had been for Joe Rodriguez and the Marine Corps, Danny began his time at the Shell station as the ideal owner-operator. He worked long hours, kept the station immaculate, and used his best customer skills. In the very first month, his station sold more gasoline than any other in his region. He was well-liked and trusted. He gave discounts to churches and charities. He even sponsored a local little league team. Somewhere, Danny acquired an antique tanker truck. He had it painted in Shell's color scheme and parked it in front of the station as a distinctive marker for the business. Everyone knew his station. It was the one with the antique tanker in front. For 7 months, Danny Mariano's Shell was a rousing success. Then, Shell Oil abruptly closed the station down and demanded full payment on all obligations due. Danny Mariano, the thief, had struck again. This time, it involved what everyone thought was an antique tanker truck. It turned out that the tank of the truck was solid and had no leaks. Every day or so, Danny would siphon out gas from his station's underground tanks, and then store it in the tank of a supposed antique truck. He had a customer who wanted untaxed gasoline, and Danny was willing to supply it. Shell Oil, it turned out, was a lot smarter than Danny thought. They quickly realized that he was stealing gasoline from them, pretending it had evaporated. They even hired a private detective who took video of Danny siphoning off gasoline. Once they had sufficient evidence, they closed the station down, demanding immediate payment. My father's $27,520 was gone in a whiff. The business had not lasted for generations. It had lasted only 7 months. Let me pause the story to share that the loss of my dad's savings significantly impacted both me and my younger brother Paul. I had been accepted to Washington State University to study engineering. I could no longer go. Instead, I could work part-time and take courses at our local community college. I chose to go another direction. I enlisted in the Air Force and focused on jet engine repair. My brother Paul made the same decision. When I was discharged, I completed a course that prepared me for my exams as a certified jet engine mechanic. I was hired by a Seattle company flying small corporate jets. I worked there for a decade before starting my own business, which I now jointly own with my brother Paul. Fortunately, both Paul and I had other options. We are not doing what our dad had originally envisioned when he saved and saved and saved. It took longer, and may have been harder, but now we are both okay. We have wives, children, and comfortable homes. For our dad, the loss of his life savings had a greater personal impact. Shell Oil placed liens on his business and he never recovered financially. 3 years after Danny Mariano's Shell closed, my dad had a heart attack and died. My cousin, Danny Mariano, left Seattle weeks after Shell Oil closed his station. I was not sorry to see him go. I did not care where he went, I just wanted him to go. While I was still in the Air Force, my brother called me.
Guess who I just talked to?
I don't know. John Lennon? The Beatles?
No, the FBI.
What did they want?
They are investigating Danny Mariano.
Good. Hope they put him back in jail.
Well, this time it was for a job.
Okay. What kind of job?
Guarding a nuclear weapons plant in Pennsylvania.
Danny guarding nuclear weapons?
We told the FBI that he was a thief. We also told them about the Marine Corps.
Well, that should scare them off.
Apparently not. He had already told them all about it. I think they're going to hire him.
Danny guarding nuclear weapons. Scary. Just over 20 years later, I receive a personal letter. Dear Cousin Michael, it began. I did not want to go any further. I knew who it was from. I remembered our crabbing trip in the Puget Sound. These are the stupid ones. The ones who were not smart enough to avoid getting caught. No smart crap would have fallen for it. This was his pitch. He was trying to sucker me in. I was not going to be one of the stupids. Still, I read on. I am dying from cancer. The disease is very advanced, and there is nothing else they can do. I have always liked you and trusted your judgment. I would like you to be the executor for my will. In my anger, I almost blurted out, "What will your executor do? Return all of the things you stole." Instead, I kept quiet and handed the letter to my wife Julie. She read it, and then softly said,
"Of course, you'll go and do what he asks."
"But I can't. I won't." She was noticeably quiet in her persistence.
"Why don't you talk to Father Luke about it?"
"Let me clarify. I was born a Catholic, but I am no longer a practicing one." "In fact, I am adamantly anti-church." The final break came after I divorced Leanne, my first wife. Life with her was a regular circus, complete chaos, acrimonious, intense, like a troop of clumsy clowns on the high wire. She was emotionally unstable, spent money on crazy things, wrecked two of my cars, and was addicted to prescription drugs. After our first year together, I decided that we should never have children. It would not be fair to them to deal with this kind of situation. The divorce itself was ugly and expensive. She threatened suicide multiple times. It got to the point where I wished she would just go through with it. Unquestionably, the very worst time of my entire life. After the divorce, I went to confession, but Father William would not hear it. He called me an abominable sinner whose very soul was at the gravest risk. He said that I had violated the sacred vows of my marriage. Until I returned to Leanne, I would not be allowed the blessings of the church. That ended my church-going life. I married Julie in a civil ceremony. The 12 years of our marriage have been the happiest of my life. She completes me, makes me whole. Our children are our greatest blessings. Danny Mariano's letter created a tension with Julie that I had never known. I knew that she still occasionally went to Mass and that she had several friends from the church. However, I did not know that she was confiding details about our personal life with a priest. I left the house angry. I drove my pickup to the lake and just sat there for hours looking at it. Then, as dusk approached, my cell phone rang. Instantly, I knew it was Julie.
"Honey, I know you are at the lake. It is where you always go to pout."
"That woman knows me too well."
"I also know that you've had time to think about it, and I believe that you've decided to go back and visit your cousin."
This time, I actually said it. "You know me too well."
"Loving someone means knowing them well?"
"Well, I suppose you are going to ask me to talk to your Father Luke."
"Not a religious conversation. Just about strategies for dealing with a dying person, particularly one you do not like."
Of course, I went. There was never any doubt that I would. Father Luke could not be more different than Father William. He was 20 years younger, and he wore jeans, a casual shirt, and penny loafers without socks. We met over coffee at a restaurant. I began the conversation telling him about my dismissal from the church by Father William.
"With all due respect to my older colleague, I think God knows all about your marriages, And he still loves you and he still wants what is best for you. It does not sound to me that your marriage to your first wife was what was best for you. Marriage is sacred, but it does not supersede God's love. And even mortal sins can be forgiven. Remember, on the cross, Jesus forgave the criminals who hung next to him. His love was greater than their crimes.
I began telling him about my past experiences with my cousin Danny Mariano. He seemed to already know most of the details. Julie had probably already told him.
You know, I am again reminded about Jesus on the cross. His forgiveness and his love were greater than their crimes. Danny Mariano is a thief who is dying. He cannot undo what he has already done. He cannot now become someone other than who he is. Still, I think he is seeking your forgiveness and your love. And, I think he knows that you acutely remember all of his crimes. You do not want to forget or forgive or show him love. You wish him no mercy. You seek a dry and severe justice.
You're right, I wish him no mercy. I want him to experience justice.
What would experience justice entail? 2 years hard labor in a Marine Corps prison? Firings? Losing his business? Separation from his family? Death by a highly insidious cancer?
Yes, all that and more.
How about rejection by those you still respect and admire? How about lack of mercy? Unforgiveness?
After a pause, Father Luke continued.
A dry and severe justice affects you more than it affects him. He has only weeks to live. Hopefully, you still have many years. You will be tasting the same salty pill for years. Mercy is a spring gushing forth with bubbling waters. Danny Mariano, I know that you are a perpetual thief, but I grant you mercy, and my forgiveness.
The voice was neither mine nor Father Luke's. Nor was it Julie or my brother Paul. It came around me, and over me, but I knew not from where. The flight from Seattle to Philadelphia was uneventful, filled only with childhood memories about my cousins Danny and Brenda. On the plane, I counted the number of times that my Aunt Vivian had lived at our house between her marriages, various job changes, and significant health crises. I could remember 9 such occasions. I'm estimating that almost half of my later childhood and early adolescence was spent with my cousins living in our house. Having Brenda and Danny in our house changed everything for my brother Paul and me. Since Brenda was a girl, she was given a bedroom to herself. The 3 guys shared the other bedroom, which was usually my previous bedroom. My dad set up the bunk beds. Paul would get the top bunk, Danny took the bottom, and I was relegated to the folding cot. It was very crowded, and, of course, Danny was the commander-in-chief and Paul and I had to follow his every order. On the plane, it seemed a positive memory, but at the time, it was not pleasant. I remember Danny hitting us for breaking his rules. Only once did my dad ever spank me, and that was because I did something that Danny had told me to do. In Philadelphia, I rented a car and drove the 60 miles to the nuclear plant. I noticed that Pennsylvania has lots of forested land and lots of open spaces. It was a place that pleased me. Then, I heard myself saying, "It also pleases Danny." That was a positive thought. Not one filled with bitterness, anger, and revenge. It felt strange. Maybe, I thought, I'll be able to do this. Growing up, I always viewed Danny Mariano as a massive man, almost mythical in size. I was surprised that the man who tried to greet me from his daybed was only a head taller than me. I had grown, I realized. Maybe, also, the disease had affected his height. Certainly, the cancer had reduced his muscle tone. I could now see his ribs and his knotty hands. His shirt hung over him like a robe and he wore suspenders since belts would no longer hold up his pants. He looked old. His skin tone was gray. He had large sores on his face. He wore thick glasses. His beard was only partially shaved. Yet, the voice was still the same, and his patronizing BS was the Danny I remembered. My dad had once said that Danny Mariano could sell sand to the Arabs. This is the finest sand on the planet, especially created deep in a star on a far planet. Notice the fine color, the rich grains. Incredibly special sand. Worth a premium price. Maybe 2 camels extra. However, his BS did not make me angry. I was actually glad to hear it. Danny was as I remembered him, not as the disease had devastated him. I stayed with Danny until he died. It happened on my 13th day at his mobile home. And, yes, I was sleeping on a cot on his covered porch. I woke and found that he had died during the night. Around midnight, there had been a fierce thunderstorm. I envision that is when God took him. Yes, I said God took him. I know that God loved him in all his imperfections. God knew he was a thief, but God forgave him. As I forgave him. When I prepared to leave, to fly home to Julie, the kids, and my business, I felt a strange urge come over me. I had settled his affairs and distributed what he had asked to whom he had asked. I done so with absolute honesty, complete fairness, and exactly as the law prescribed. Yet, I felt this strange urge. It was unlike me. It was inconsistent with my character. I felt an urge, a desire, a need to steal something. Not just anything, but something of genuine value. I don't know why I had this urge or what it meant. I just felt an incredible need to steal something. So, I went into the small room that Danny used as his den, the room in which he spent most of his time. There on the wall, I saw a presidential commendation framed in a gold-colored frame. It was given in recognition of 23 years in the protective services of the United States of America. There in the corner was the president's signature. Without doubt, it was the most valuable object in the room. I removed it from the wall and carefully inspected it. Most valuable thing in the room. I have to have it. I won't tell anyone that I took it. Most valuable object in the room. I opened my zipper portfolio case and slipped it in. Then, I said my goodbyes and drove back to the airport. It was only on the plane that I realized what had happened. In my psyche, I needed to recognize Danny Mariano, the perpetual, lifelong thief. What better way than to steal something of his? To steal his most valued possession.
Appaloosa Springs Audio Theater is a creative collaboration whose purpose is to write, produce, and share original story content through webcast radio experiences.